You are listening to the Signal to Noise podcast on the ProSoundWeb Podcast Network, sponsored by Audix. Hear what you've been missing. Audix is proud to introduce the new line of dynamic closed-back headphones designed for audio professionals and audiophiles to deliver the most accurate sound possible. I wish I could break free, back to where I'm supposed to be.
Welcome back to the Signal to Noise podcast on ProSoundWeb. First and foremost on the docket this episode, Kyle Trinside had a Whopper for dinner.
Yeah, it's rough. It's hit me hard. I'm trying to keep my levels up to about a 7 right now. Pushing it for sure.
When you say level, are we talking like Spinal Tap amp setting level?
Yeah, just okay. I mean, whoa, that thing just knocks you down. You think you could do the 2 for $5 and then you can't. And it's probably a good idea you didn't. That's how I feel.
Okay. Chris Leonard, how are you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling great. I rocked some chicken cutlet I made tonight. It was good stuff.
I saw you sent pictures to the group text. That is a really nice looking chicken cutlet. I'm jealous. So I think I had a granola bar in between moving staging decks around today. So now that we're all well fed.
You're welcome.
before we get to guests though, we got a few housekeeping things I want to do.
Okay, all right, this is your show, man. Do it up.
Hell yeah, it is. We did just give away a book.
True.
So we gave away a copy of John Huntington's. What's the name of the book?
Intro to Show Network.
Yes, yep. That one. James Burke was the winner of that.
Shout out to James. Well done.
Also, John was gracious enough that anyone who entered to win got a 10% off coupon to purchase the book if they wanted to. So the reason I bring that up is, you know, when we do some of these like fun giveaways and stuff, there's perks to like, you know, trying to enter to win. So, you know, next time, you know, make sure you get on the train there and do that.
And we also send your email address to Kyle's spam list. And he
I got something from Google today. Thanks for that.
We have merch out. You know, people getting stickers, shirts, hoodies, stuff like that. You might have some time to get something in before Christmas if you want. So make sure you go check that out.
Can I talk about? I had a milestone. I'll call it a milestone.
Absolutely.
I for the first time in my career put a sticker on any of my cases.
Kyle's band?
It was not Kyle's band. Is sticker free. I've been sticker free my whole life. I finally took the plunge. I got a new Pelly for early Christmas, and I put a Signal to Noise podcast sticker on it. So I'm repping. But you know what? I think I'm really excited about tonight's episode because I think people who have been listening to the show for a while know that we've been kind of dipping our toes into the theater waters, and I always enjoy that because it's something that's just a very different world than a lot of the work that we've done. And for this episode, we have two cool theater people on, one of which has been on the show before, and I brought him on to be sort of a guest host so he can participate in the friendly ribbing of tonight's guest. Please welcome back to the show, Mr. Kevin McCoy.
Yay.
Hello.
Welcome. Hi, Kevin.
Listen, back. I have a free idea for Burger King marketing. I would like all the flavors of a Whopper, but in taco form. Please.
That would be good.
Michael's not a fan of other things being flavored like other things.
Is it called a talker? I'll get back to you with the branding. I'll think about it as we go on. Well, it's sort of like the jelly beans, man. Like the popcorn flavored jelly bean, like
gross.
It tastes like popcorn, but it shouldn't because it has the gross jelly bean texture. I'm hesitant, you know?
Yeah, but taco and Whopper aren't that far distant. Like, you know, it's similar
two
things.
Syllables. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, like I had potato chips one time that were like taco flavored potato chips or something like that. And Michael was like, oh, I don't like anything. It's like imitating something else. You just like the real thing. So I don't know if the Burger King, the Whopper.
I like sour apple candy, like Laffy Taffy. I just think banana is tricky. When you try to make other things taste like banana, like the only thing that should taste like banana is banana.
I just can't deal with your inconsistency, Michael.
Kevin, tell us about our guest this episode.
Awesome. Our guest this episode is Elissa Cohen. She is an amazing theatrical sound technician, Alyssa and I toured together on the Motown tour. She was the A2 to my A1. She's from Las Vegas. She also has toured on School of Rock. She toured with Rent into China, I think, as the A1. She'll correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure she'll correct me if I'm wrong. And most recently was the A2 on the first national tour of Frozen. So here she is, Alyssa Cohen.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah.
Likewise. I usually pay Kevin to say nice things about me, but thanks for doing that this time.
No. Well, it sounded like he actually did some research there, man.
I think he just read my resume, to be honest. I'm not sure.
I happen to remember those things. And also, I don't know that I said anything too nice. I tried to be careful about that.
But it wasn't too not nice either.
It seemed very measured and neutral. Like, yeah. He stuck to the facts, you know, like just the facts.
Yeah. He's better at NPR. The intro than I am. Yeah.
I'll take it.
Can I start with a question?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just gonna dive in beyond the taco talk.
Okay.
Alyssa.
Yes.
Something that I liked working with you for is that you are very good at establishing rapport with actors.
Thank you.
Will you talk about that and like how you do it, but also like why that's important in the theatrical setting? Not that it's not important in other settings, but
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that especially in theater, we all have to play our own part, and the actors put a lot out there on the stage. Not that musicians don't, but they have to kind of sacrifice a lot of their individuality in order to be doing, you know, given direction and do what they have to do. And so I think it's really important, especially as an A2 and in the audio team, to help them feel comfortable. So I think it's important to see how they're doing, and if and when they're not doing well, it just translates so directly to their vocal performance that, I mean, I think that's just free knowledge for us. So I make sure to check in with especially principals and then ensemble members who have any speaking roles, just because it's a comforting thing, I think, and I don't like surprises. So if someone's sick and I don't know, I don't like that. Yeah.
Great.
I mean, that's something that we've talked about, especially when we talk about modern engineers, and we've had this conversation with a couple different modern engineers. It's not just about giving them a good modern mix. It's that job is all about keeping people comfortable, because totally. As soon as your artist isn't comfortable, the show goes out the window. And so it sounds like it's very much the same thing when you have an actor on stage and you're dealing with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think because of that, I think it's consistency in that conversation is also really important. And to learn, I mean, and we do 8 shows a week, which is a little bit different, but also to learn kind of where their breaking point is at and make sure that they know that we kind of have, we have the power and we should be able to lean on each other between the technology and the performers. And I think there are a lot of sound people don't necessarily, they keep that in their pocket because it's true. We do have it, but it's really comforting, I think, for a lot of performers to understand that and know that we're working with them instead of against them.
We work against each other, but not against the performers.
Yeah. But we're not talking about that right now.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm curious how different being a touring Broadway person would be as opposed to situated, say, you know, actually, you know, in Manhattan or in a city. How much is the difference other than just the fact you're in a different city for an extended period of time in a different bed?
I can't really talk to that, but I guess Kevin, sitting in San Francisco, can you talk to that?
I mean, I think kind of like what Alyssa is saying with checking in, it's when you're touring, it's a little bit easier to sort of blame things on the changing houses, right?
That's fair.
Like they're like, oh, I'm really having a hard time here, and you're like, I know this house is just really hard to hear in, hopefully next week will be better. Whereas when you're sitting somewhere, there's no next week will be better. It's just you have to make them feel comfortable in the situation they're in. So I think that's a big thing. Obviously there's like the logistics of just not having to think about moving the show too, but
that's, I mean, the exciting, like, part.
It's always like that kind of the clock's ticking mentality, right? When you're on the road and you're moving the show all the time. I mean, is there that stress about getting everything done that you have to do and not getting behind on something and making sure everything's ready in time?
Our jobs are stressless. I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, Alyssa was always great about that on Motown, about sort of the prep for the loadout. She was way better at that than I was. I was just like, whatever, we'll load out on Sunday.
It's yeah. all about the out, period. Yeah. No matter what game you play.
That's right. Saturday afternoon, she'd be coming to me asking, like, you know, do you know where this is? Where are we going to prep this? So, yeah.
But that's, I mean, just on the road, like, that's the exciting part. We do the same show every day, and sure, there's so many variables, but I'm sure you know with touring, just in general, that's kind of where your mind starts to, your gears start moving.
Kyle's gears stopped moving like 12 years ago, I think.
Yeah, pretty much. And then my Bosley subscription canceled, so no.
I feel like there's been some good conversations on this podcast with like A1s about just sort of like a lot of the sound, the front of house sound stuff and that sort of thing.
Sure.
I was wondering if maybe you want to mention a little bit about some of the stuff that is usually more specific to A2s, like especially like building the pit, which is kind of a weird. Yeah.
Maybe talk about that too.
Yeah. Yeah. As an A2, I basically take care of everything but the politics and building the main PA if it's working properly.
Are you your own RF wrangler? Or do you have someone that wrangles frequencies, or do you have to send ahead for the theater to give them to you? How's that work out?
Generally, it's a relationship with whatever shop our gear comes from. They will give us in advance, they have our schedule and they'll give us a starting point. But I always make sure, to kind of scan and see what's happening before the show, during load in when we have the time. And then that's kind of the most nerve wracking part of the first night is once everything's on and butts are in seats, what's going to act up differently. And so I'm kind of on top of that. Every show is different. So in the past, most of my experience, I have, a local as well, kind of hopefully with enough basic understanding to help me in that department if necessary. With Frozen in particular, there's not enough that goes on stage in the audio world, and I'm kind of there to take care of all of it. But, you know, you just kind of wait to see what happens and then troubleshoot and figure out who you can have help you do what.
I like how casually you're like, I'll just wait to see what happens, because I did the last show that I did that had a ton of wireless on it. I had a college kid as an A2 on deck, and I still was just sitting at the mixer the whole time. Like, I just had this feeling like, okay, I'm just waiting for something to break. You know? Like, I'm just kind of like, I never was able to just totally relax. And that was a very different thing for me, because I'm usually not dealing with 27 packs.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I mean, there's like, you go to a point where you've done all you can do until you're in specific show circumstances. And, you know, it's not really worth wasting time trying to make stuff fail if everything isn't in show conditions. You know, and then of course it's having all of your backups ready and knowing the show and the actor tracks, so you know where to find people, and then having that cool calm voice and saying, "Hey, your mic is broken," and that's the last thing they want to hear. You know, so yeah, I mean, I think more than anything, as I'm sure you guys might agree, especially in theater, until you have that exact situation in front of you, there's only so much you can do about it.
So I'm interested in, you know, kind of, so like, I mean, we'll use Frozen as an example. Like, so you're on deck during the show, or you're, you know, in the trap room, wherever you may be. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny. I had a buddy of mine who's a really good system tech, and he got looped into like 4 days of a touring musical production. I don't remember the circumstances surrounding it, but he was just so far out of his element, and someone just gave him a list and said, okay, well, you know, you sit here and you put these headphones on and you listen to these mics. And if something doesn't work, here's where you can find this person, you know, at this place before this scene. And he was like, I don't know what's happening, because it was just such a departure from what he's used to dealing with during a show. It's, you know, it's a really, really different kind of show mode existence. And I just love to kind of hear about, you know, sort of some of the things that are just on your radar during a typical show, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I will say, learning a show through the tech process that is, you know, just getting it on its feet to go on tour is much, much easier, because you have all of those days, you know, baby stepping through each number to learn and to pay attention to watch. And I spend a lot of that time actually in the house, kind of watching the action and seeing where people are moving. And then same thing, then first couple of weeks you're running the show is I have my eyes on the stage, and on the flow of tracks and characters and trying to learn what that looks like. And then of course it does start to calm down a couple of months into it when the actors have finally learned, you know, they're my cast to be here and every wig change, you have to check it again. And, but I also think it's important to be visible. So during the show, I mean, for the most part, and again, every show is different. So on Motown, when Kevin and I did that show together, we had 10 wireless handhelds that were constantly on stage and off stage, and we had to track them and make sure every actor had the right number mic so that the, you know, the fader came up and it was correct. And that was a little bit different than a show like Frozen, where we do have a couple practical mics and hats and you know, one or two things here and there. But for the most part, it's making sure that there's consistency on stage with the actors so that the mix is also consistent. Another thing I like to do is kind of keep in, you know, visual range of all the stage managers so that when something happens that they recognize before I do because of whatever technical something, this or that, or they're hearing something from the conductor that I don't have any comm on or anything. I'm kind of just there. People have to be able to find me to communicate. So that whatever situation it is, somebody can find me and get the information so I can start troubleshooting immediately. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, it's really great. And, you know, I had the pleasure of watching Kevin present some stuff from his touring rig Monday, I think. And, you know, some of what he talked about was, you know, how he can communicate with his A2 during the show. If a mic's going down, or, you know, if they think a mic's going down, but it was really just because he missed a pickup, or,
totally.
You know, that kind of dynamic is really interesting to me because it's very, very different than, you know, the interaction that I would have between the front of house and a monitor engineer on a music concert, you know?
Yeah. And I think, I don't know. I mean, Kevin, you could probably talk to this also. I know for me that there's a lot, I learned so much as the A1 touring Rent. I did have an A2 on stage and trying to understand in the A1 position, the mixer position, that flow of communication and what's helpful and what is just kind of annoying because you have so many things to focus on. But any heads up you can give a mixer, I think, is probably helpful.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that it helps that in our business, we almost always cross train with each other. So, you know, on Motown, we both mixed the show and we both ran the deck track. And so we
sometimes sort of reluctantly.
Listen, 10 handhelds was a lot to keep track of.
It's a lot. And I think sorry to interrupt. I think that's important too when you're doing the production side of a musical. The A2 is kind of responsible for figuring out how all of that works and what kind of tools we need backstage in order to do it effectively and efficiently.
Yeah, and there's also sometimes it's easy to get into the mentality of like, I should just do all these things myself because I can, but the A2 track really should be as empty as possible. The deck track should be as empty as possible. And most of the routine actual cued thing should be handed off to local crew so that the A2 is available for troubleshooting and emergency response as much as possible, which I think was the case on Motown. The only times that we were actually doing cues was when there was another cue happening on the other side of the stage.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you did a fine job of that, but I think that the cross training between the two tracks is critical for understanding what the information the other person will need.
You keep using the word track. Excuse me. Is that just like another word for like the role, or is that a specific, like, you know, Broadway style term?
That is the term we would use for, in general, an actor's, let's say choreography from the very beginning of the show to the very end of the show. It's their track. It is all of the details of how they, are part of the show. And I would only assume that that's also where we adopted the term, is that is a track sheet will have, scene numbers and times and song names and everything for us to go through, and anyone can pick it up and see where you need to be for what handoff or for what you know, position check or whatever it might be. So that's what we use the term track for that.
Yeah, and Chris, I mean, you know who Joya is, but for those who don't know who Joya is, my girlfriend Joya, she does hair and makeup design for Broadway stuff, and so she always talks about, this is a busy track, so we have to change. This person has 5 wig changes, or this isn't, you know, not a busy. So track, I guess it's just, you know, the way she uses it is, you know, what this character or this person has to do as they go through the show and where she needs to be to help this person do particular things at different times.
Cool. I learned something. I can go home now.
Okay. Show's over. 20 it's minutes.
I got a question though. On we're talking about communications. So specifically tech wise, comm wise, what are you typically using? Are you using a mix of hardwired and wireless? Are you using like HelixNet, Barella? What specifically comm wise are you guys using? Maybe on Frozen.
Specifically on Frozen, so we do use basic comm, and then also we are using FreeSpeak for wireless. It depends on the situation. So, for example, the automation, the person who runs automation, he doesn't go anywhere. He sits still. So he is wired, whereas everyone that is technically running what we call a deck track will all be wireless. The stage manager will be wired because, again, she or he is standing in the same place for the entire show. It depends. Every show is kind of different, but I think Kevin, I think HelixNet is definitely where we're as a Broadway world turning to. But it, obviously it's not very cheap.
Yeah. I think pretty much everyone's at HelixNet and FreeSpeak for the most part. There might be some holdovers in the Telex BTR world for wireless. And I mean, on Hamilton, we have HelixNet as our primary comm, but, we have old party line, ClearCom party line as a backup for everything too. But most of the shops have HelixNet, so that's kind of the gear that's on Broadway tours is often driven by what the shops have, and they're pretty much all HelixNet now.
And then how many channels are you typically running on a given show? not like individual packs, like, you know, so
yeah,
like,
yeah, no,
you
know, of like, course,
you,
of course.
You know, like disciplines and stuff like that. How many individual channels?
Let's see, probably about 6 to 8, because we also have private lines for different people and departments to kind of chat outside of the stage management line where the show is actually getting called. And that's both complicated and simplified in the case that sometimes they want to hear what the troubleshooting that's going on. But that's also a lot of noise to kind of weed through in order to continue to call the show. If let's say a carpenter is foreseeing something based on what they've seen on stage. So probably 6 to 8.
And is that
has been nice, because it used to be that there would be like a big XLR patch just sort of sitting in the middle of the house that we would use for tech periods. And when someone requested something in addition, you'd have to run over there and like figure out what you have open on that patch. And HelixNet allows us just to do that.
I don't ever get it was funny. We had Pete Erskine on the show like 40, 50 episodes ago, and he's like, you know, one of the top comms guys on the planet, and the way he talks about comms, I'm just like, I'm so like willfully ignorant of comms. I'm terrified of it, and I don't know how to work it, and I just like, I put this headset on and I press talk and people can hear me, and that's as far as I go. So whenever Chris brings up comms, I'm like, I'm gonna lose this real quick.
No, it's an interesting thing, because it's especially in the corporate world, right? I mean, it's the backbone of any show. I mean, same with, you know, Broadway world as well. That, you know, communication is key, and obviously some of these advancements, the HelixNet and Eclipse and Matrix Frames and this, that, and the other. It's you know, obviously the broadcast world has been doing it for decades, and I think slowly other worlds have been adapting to it, and it's just it intrigues me. Sadly,
it's fascinating. I mean,
yeah, you do you, Chris. Don't let me peer pressure you,
Chris. I'm with you. I love comm, and I think it's fascinating. And I it's also like the first way that the sound department gets in trouble,
and the last.
Yeah, I usually try to. If there were comm requests on Motown, I would send them to Elissa so that people could get mad at her before me.
But they all knew it was your fault anyway, so yes. That's what happens when you're the A1. It's your fault.
We were actually both learning HelixNet and FreeSpeak at the same time at that point, which was exciting, since neither of us had used either of them up until that point. I think that's a true statement.
I think I think that once the system's up and running, it's pretty user-friendly. It's just getting it to function the way you want to. But on the road, once it's working properly, I think it's very, very easy to manipulate.
So I'm interested. I mean, when you talk about getting things up and running, like, I'm interested in the two situations. One situation being this new tour is getting ready to go out, and so we have to build it and tech it and, you know, get it all the parts to work. But then the situation of you're coming into an existing tour and you're replacing somebody, and then you have to learn it and get up to speed on this. I'd love to hear about your experiences with that stuff.
Which do you want to talk about first?
Well, let's say when you're starting off, you're starting off the show, and maybe not a Broadway show, but like the tour is getting ready to go out, and you know, you got to go put all the pieces together and figure out how this is going to happen.
I mean, I think the nice part about that in this situation is that there already is an iteration of the show itself. So normally we have access, you know, as long as everyone's playing nice, we have access to paperwork and track sheets and kind of stuff to either listen to or understand some of the small details. And then, man, I don't know if there's a formula to it or what it is, but every day we do a different scene and you kind of learn more about what you have to do and what you need. Kevin, do you have any, I mean, I think it's just learn as you go and figure it out.
Yeah.
okay, cool. But I think the thing about that though, is when it is a new production, everyone is in the same boat. When I took over Rent, it was a whole lot of information thrown at me very quickly. And I was the only person who needed to catch up. And that's a little bit, that's a different, you know, a different environment to be dealing with your stress levels in. and that tour itself had a lot of, not a lot, but a good amount of one-nighters. So my first 3 days on that show, I did the show from very beginning to end, which ended up being the best way to learn. But ask a lot of questions and, you know, especially if you're going to be in charge, you kind of got to ask a stupid question sooner than later, would be kind of how I did it, I guess.
The other challenge that's sort of along this line that is usually faced by A2s and not so much by A1s is learning the mix after a show has existed already. So the A1s usually are able to learn the mix in the tech process with sort of the more forgiving, you know, everyone's learning. So it's a little bit more forgiving. Whereas the A2 is expected to learn a mix perfectly from the A1 without usually having any rehearsals to mix.
Yeah. During a live show.
Yeah.
Kevin, you want to tell them about the first time I mixed Motown?
I'm pretty sure I have it blocked out. do you want to tell them how great it is to learn a mix from someone like me?
It's awful, really. It's awful. No, Kevin's grips are immaculate, and that's definitely helpful. I've learned a couple different shows from different people with different script styles, and that is extremely important in picking up all the nuances. So
Kevin's scripts could be like framed and matted and put on a wall somewhere.
I mean,
I would one page signed by Kevin.
The amount of time he puts into it, I simply don't. I mean, I remember when we were teching Motown, he just never ate. We would go to dinner and he'd sit there and work on a script, and he probably never slept and he worked on a script because it is very time consuming.
Well, no.
When we left the room.
I know the trick here. He has cheese at front of house. He does. I learned this on the last episode. I was listening.
Very good. Very good. But I wouldn't bring it to him.
Cheese and mince, I think.
Oh, was it mince?
Mince. It's mince, yeah.
Oh, wait. Did we talk about having cheese? Oh, right. Because Kyle had made a cheese platter.
Yes.
Charles admitted. Yeah. Okay. All right.
We contaminated a very good idea, which was him having a refreshing mint during the show when he had to go ahead and make it all.
I also have cheeses. You are not remembering incorrectly. I have little snack cheeses because Indiana reminded me.
Yeah. I remember.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, you're absolutely right. I have little Tillamook snack cheeses at front of house. I did not do that yet on Motown.
That's new. Yeah, I was going to say that's new to me. I do almonds.
Yeah. Nice.
Cheese gets on your fingers. How do you do that?
I don't know.
That's gross. I don't want to mix after you now.
You have to deal with the beard hairs and the faders anyway.
That's true.
Oh, my God.
It's okay. I have sweaty hands, so we know.
So... You talked about learning as an A2, learning the mix live. How are you doing that if you had to do your A2 role? How does that work?
So you don't necessarily do it on day one. And I think that with shows where you're in a city for a little bit longer, it gets easier because once you know that your locals know where they need to be, you can kind of back off. Motown was amazing in that we had a extra fader bank and I was able to actually push the faders backstage and follow along in my script until, of course, there are always chunks of the show that I never touched because I had to be in certain places. But that, or, you know, you take a recording and you sit in your hotel room with pennies and you listen through it and you start to practice the muscle memory. It's terrifying. The first time I mixed Motown, Kevin looked at me and said, yeah, you should just do it all. And it came out of nowhere. And I don't remember any of it because it was all so fast and so incredible that, yeah, I don't remember it. I just know what happened.
It's a blur. It's a beautiful blur. It's,
yeah, amazing.
Good way to describe it.
I love that concept. So you sit there with pennies as if faders, and because that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's hard because all different brands of consoles have different spacing and different like width of the actual faders. So I was on a Yamaha console, an old Yamaha console, for rent for 14 months, and then came back to a Digico, and my hands were just. I more than anything had to just really practice
different feel, man.
Yeah, different.
Stare at the desk. It's,
exactly. Yeah.
I have an idea. So, all right. So now that hear me out. So now that 3D printing is a thing,
yes,
I think you could make 3D prints of the VCA sections of the different consoles.
Yeah, I was gonna say I have one also.
Oh, yeah. Damn it. Right.
But that is a great idea.
Fantastic idea. There's definitely some R&D to be done on making them not jam up. 3D printing is awesome, but like mine is sort of wood and 3D printed and some UHMW, and like sometimes the UHMW sort of like jams on itself, but it's getting there. Chris, the other thing I'll just say in follow-up to Alyssa's response is that ideally, there is a time like early in the tour where maybe the tour sits in a place for longer than usual. Like maybe there's a month stop somewhere, and then you hire another local to learn the A2 track. And then the A2 is then free to come out and just spend, like, they'll train that person for a couple shows, but then they can come out and just learn the A1 track, the mixing track, for a week or two. And so you get like a week of them just watching and then a week of them slowly taking over. I don't know who would just throw someone in. I feel like perhaps that first show I was moving the band faders for you.
You were. Yeah. I was like, how about I focus on making sure we can hear the plot line?
Yeah.
It's a little different.
Minor details.
Yeah. I will say though, the caveat to hiring someone else is that for the most part, they can figure out how to make the show run. However, if something system related happens, the first response would be for me to go backstage. And that happens. I mean, that has happened and will always happen. Even now during Frozen, if something crazy enough happens, I will switch with my A1 so that I can take care of it, because there's so many more details you know about the position you sit in more often.
How many people are on Frozen, would you say?
Audio people or performers?
No, just people, total tour. How many people are you guys touring?
We just had a meeting with 73 people. So that's musicians. We travel our entire band, and swings and crew and advanced people. There's a lot of them, and more of them keep coming.
You get it from the truck to the deck. So how many trucks are on like Frozen? I mean, this sounds like a legit like 12 truck tour.
It's a 20 truck tour.
Yeah.
And we are currently in the midst of kind of reassessing the advance package as well, across the board, just because the show is, I mean, there's a lot of technology in the show, specifically within video and automation, and so it is not an easy show to move. Their audio fits in one truck by itself.
Of course. And we always get the small truck now.
Well, and you know, everyone thinks that means we have, you know, little to do, and it's sometimes it's frustrating because we have so much to do, but we have to wait to do it, you know.
Yeah.
I always say
the video loads in first, right? So you get video and get the staging.
All load in at the exact same time. We're all so intertwined.
Well,
I mean, it's complicated. I mean, in Frozen, Frozen specifically, we put speakers in the deck, and we have speakers within the lighting units, and we have speakers, you know, so it's kind of impossible to do it separately.
Without the build. Yeah.
Yeah. Though I like your idea because it sounds quite pleasant.
Hurry up, lighting, get your stuff out of, get it up in the air.
Well, I like to say that sound has an extra truck full of sound waves. You just can't see it.
Yeah,
from doors open of the truck to the doors open of the first show on a tour, how long are this? Maybe specifically Frozen, I guess, but I'm sure it varies per production.
Count it by caterings. How many caterings till doors open?
Well, Motown, we did one day, right? We'd start. Did we start at 6 or 8, Kevin? Do you remember? Yeah, so 6 a.m. through show, so 11 p.m. ish, 11:30.
Oh, so it was actually like you did it loaded in that morning, the show that night.
It was awful. Yes, we did.
Well, but that's not as typical of Broadway touring. That's actually what I was going to ask. Is like, so touring doesn't. It's different. I guess it's different than, you know, rock and roll touring in that you're in, you know, four different cities at four different nights. In Broadway, though, aren't you typically at least there for a couple of nights, or is it change?
It all changes. It just depends. I could give you a different answer for each of the tours that I've done.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, Motown specifically, that version of the tour, we were doing week sits with a couple of two weeks here and there. And so the Actors Union says we can do 8 shows a week. And obviously the producers want us to do 8 shows a week is really what it comes down to. And that was very, I don't, and maybe it was because it was my first tour. I don't know. But that tour was very, very hard to get in that amount of time. We had quite a handful of local musicians to then incorporate into the pit and be ready for them. And it was constantly a push to the very last second. But
yeah, it was definitely a show that where they could have considered doing a Monday evening, you know, partial halfway load in, but that costs money. So
yeah. And Frozen right now takes about 4 days. And even then, that's not a lot of time to really troubleshoot when necessary.
And is that one 2 shows a day?
Frozen?
Yeah.
Only Saturdays and Sundays. So I think, what does it say? Equity, Kevin? It says like you can't do more than 2 show days in a row.
So it's like a matinee style thing.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much every
Broadway show. Sorry. I'm sorry, Alyssa. Please don't. I'm sorry. Don't hit me. I'll just say that pretty much every Broadway tour that is there for a week or more has basically the same schedule in every week because the theaters sell their schedule to their subscribers, and their subscribers are used to, oh, the Wednesday night show is at 8 o'clock, and oh, the Saturday there's a matinee. And it actually varies by city. Like in some cities, there's like a Wednesday matinee or a Thursday matinee, but then they only have one show on Sunday or whatever. So it's more based on city than show.
Kyle, you've had your hand up for like 10 minutes. You have a question or are you just rolling? Man?
Oh, what no, I was actually just, that was, some of my questions were just answered, but like on a 20 truck tour, man, that's your dock has to be moving like constantly all night.
It's very complicated because, I mean, it's twofold, right? Like you need space in the venue to put the stuff that's in the truck. And then also you need to get rid of all the carts or the empty boxes because there's not enough space in the venue. It's a huge dance. And I think, Frozen was only on the road for about 3 months before, you know, crazy 2020 took over. So we are not professionals at moving the show whatsoever. It's a cluster because that's still the part of the process that we were in, was figuring out what we needed and how to better prepare every time we move the show with, again, all the variables of a new city and a new set of people.
I'm interested in, you know, the idea of, all right, we're moving to a different theater. So, you know, some of the variables do you have to sort out, like, you know, mixed position and snake runs and where can I hang my surrounds? And I mean, a lot of that stuff, Kevin said the other day, he's like, yeah, I just gave up. I just show up and we just do whatever we want.
Yeah.
but I like Kevin's
MO is giving up. That was a good one.
Shots fired.
He warned me there was going to be some lighthearted verbal abuse on this episode. I've not been disappointed this far.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. As
were
you asking
a question, Michael?
Oh, Lord.
I mean, I think to some degree, probably there's less tweaking you have to do from venue to venue, right? Because you're carrying so much of your own stuff. But I imagine there's still a lot of stuff that you just have to say, okay, well, we have to do it a little bit differently in this room because of the dimensions or the seating or whatever. That's a question in statement form.
Kevin, do you want to talk about that? Do you want me to talk about that?
You should talk about it. You're the guest.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I mean,
also, I want to hear about how that worked in China for you, because I think that was probably an interesting side story.
I mean, we could do a whole episode about China, to be honest. It is very different than the US, but I mean, you're right, though. I mean, there is planning and advanced work that gets done when it comes to the system and the way the speakers will fill the space. However, there's a lot we learn about the venue when we get in there, even, you know, oh, there's a pillar here, or there, you know, the wall is made of such and such that we can't actually drill anything into it, or all that kind of stuff. I will say the first thing I do when I walk into a venue is bombard them with questions. Well, Kevin's in the corner crying and I'm asking questions.
Unwrapping, just pouting and unwrapping his little cheeses. Yeah.
Exactly. But you know, things we want to know, like, again, yeah, like you said, how do you get cable to the front of house position, and how do you, you know, what's your comm like in the spot booth? Do you have solid dry lines, or do we need to run, you know, 400 feet of a six pair up there in order to just get comm in video, or, you know what I mean? All those things, you know, does your pit move? Can we drill into the deck in order to put front fills in? I mean, the list goes on and on, and really there's I even write it down. I have a list for every show that I go in and I get those answers. And then as we're waiting for the audio truck, I start to formulate, kind of what to do first and where to put the boxes and, the process of the day in order to get you have to get cable in order to make the system work. So, yeah.
How did you do all this stuff on Motown? That's amazing.
Yeah. While you were crying, I did all of that.
I should have paid more attention. This sounds like a bit of a useful knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. No. But actually, I will say, having Kevin as my A1 for my first tour was so valuable, because Kevin let me make mistakes and then we talk about them. And Kevin said to me, you know, I stand by the choices that you make, and if we have an issue with a local, I stand by you and we'll talk about it later. And having that comfort and support to learn, because there's so much to learn about touring that has nothing to do with audio.
Yeah, you sound like a shit disturber. I dig that. I dig that.
Good cop, bad cop. You know, someone's got to do it. Yeah.
Well, you know what, though? And there's something really, really important about creating an environment for the people around you where they feel like not only safe to do their job, but also like trusted to do their job. Like to me, like, okay, well, I hire you to do this thing, and if I'm there looking over your shoulder the whole time, then it says like, hey, I'm not really sure that you can actually do this thing. Like,
totally.
I you know, get good people and let them do their thing has been something that I always try to do. But also I really, really try hard, particularly I'm working with, like, you know, like a local crew, or, you know, people that I haven't worked with who don't know me, one of the first things I say is to try to establish this, like, hey, if you are not sure, please come and ask me. Like, if you don't understand something I said, or I use a word you don't know, like ask, absolutely ask. I try to make it as easy and as painless as possible for someone to go like, hey, I don't understand anything you just said, because I'd much rather have that than I got to go back and redo something because it got screwed up. Like, that's a really important aspect of being in a work environment. And I've been on the other end of that too, right? I've been a local hand, and something comes in and they just drop this big rack off and go, here, set this up. And I'm like, well, it's not my rig, dude. I don't know how it's supposed to go.
I'm going to put it out there. If you're ever in town or somewhere close, I want to come out and see all this stuff. I want to see it. I'll stay out of the way. I promise. Later.
Oh no, please. You can be in the way. I'll just work over you. It's fine.
it intrigues me, you know,
I would love that. I think that's also part of this industry is when we all share that passion, is showing it and getting to talk through it and that excitement. I mean, I could sit here and talk about it all day, because I love musical theater and I love the ability that we have as audio people to really change the environment and the experience.
Kyle, I would love for you to do that too and hear your thoughts about it afterwards, because I mean,
and
Kyle,
videotape me. Strap a GoPro to me, please.
Yeah.
That's probably the best worst idea.
It's so like a helmet cam sort of thing.
Please.
It was funny because when Once on This Island came through my area last year, and Shannon Slayton invited me to come out, and he just kind of walked me around, and I got to see everything. And it's weird because it's in a venue that I've worked at dozens of times, so I know what it's like to be backstage in this venue, and that there's nothing mysterious or cool. Just it's another backstage. But I was like blown away. I was like, this is so cool, and it's so different. And I felt like I was kind of looking behind the scenes at Disney World or something. It's really such a shift, and that's something that Kevin and I have talked a little bit about. But there's this big divide in a lot of ways between the concert world and the theatrical world, and there's so many interesting little things that are different. And so, Kyle, I would love to see you kind of check that out. I mean, I think you'd have a blast.
Awesome.
Chris would not be, and
that's why we get excited about these shows. It's like, dude, it's not the same old thing. Like, I looked at pictures from some of the cabling from some of the theater shows after we talked about it last time, and I was like, holy shit. Like, someone really did like that. They have to do that every day. You know what I mean? Because they're running over that cable for 5 days straight, you know, like just how the show goes in and goes up. I would love to see that. I would love it. I might even like the show too. I'm not kidding. I like Frozen.
It's incredible. Actually, I miss it a lot. It's Disney, so it's magical. But I just wanted to point out
too. So,
perfect. She can't come backstage. Songs. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I know all the songs. I'm the creepiest fan. That's
probably me? Not true.
Middle-aged dad knows all the Frozen songs.
That's awesome.
So, on a tour, is the, you said you're making decisions on like where you can and can't put front fills and speakers and whatnot. So, how much of, I guess you have like a baseline design, and then you have to make design choices on site. And who's making those decisions, and then who ultimately does all the timing and tuning on a tour?
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, like a three pack.
For the most part, the timing and tuning is all the A1. And most of the decisions, I think would also be, I mean, at the end, the A1, but I will say as an A2 who likes to work with an A1, that they trust and that they, you know, have, can say things openly. Most of the time with Kevin, most of the A1s I've worked with, I can make the decisions and then explain why. And the A1 will say, yep, that's right. Keep moving, you know, stuff like that. So,
yeah, it also helps if the A1 doesn't care.
There is that. Everyone wants to hire an A1 who doesn't care.
I'll also say that sometimes on some shows, I guess I'll just say on Hamilton, because there's more resources, there's an advance team that goes out, and some of the timing and tuning is done by the lead advance person in that case, which keeps the various Hamilton tours sort of in check with each other, because it's the same person tuning the system in each case. But for most shows, it's the A1 with the A2.
So is there a leapfrog of gear at that point then in order to do that?
For advance, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good.
What gear are you advancing? Actually, Alyssa, the question for you. What gear are you advancing the leapfrogs?
So we don't have a full advance package on Frotown.
That was like a hell of a mashup. I'd buy a ticket to that.
That's a hobbit.
Movie.
Oh my gosh. For the most part, we advance cable, to be honest. And all of that hard work and you know, back-breaking sweating happens before we get there. And then we just plug in the console. Ideally, we would have an advanced surround package where the speakers and all those cables get set up, because there is a huge surround system. However, at this point, that has not been put forth.
Yeah. It's definitely a cost benefit issue that sometimes is hard to play out with the producers. Yeah.
I want to know if there's, I was listening to Chris Rabel talk the other day. He mixes, I think he's out with Kenny Chesney currently. And before that, Bruno Mars. So like, you know, he does a couple of small artists.
No big deal.
He was talking about console automation, and he said, yeah, the first time I ever fired a snapshot live, I muted the whole PA. you know, is there anything where you look back on and you're like, oh, holy shit, what a fucking horrible screw up that was? And you know what I mean? I don't want to put you on the spot, but I definitely want to put Kevin on the spot.
I mean, I actually have an answer to that. I know what it is.
It's an answer for something that I did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have a long list of things I could tell you that Kevin did that was not the right choice, but again, another episode.
I know of a hiring choice.
Ooh, okay, yeah. No. So I was mixing School of Rock, and that show, there's just so much instrumentation, and it's hard to, when you're learning the mix from someone else, it's hard to understand what's coming from the pit or what's coming from on stage or what is, you know, quote unquote real and what isn't. And during, I think it was the finale, there was a guitar solo from the kid on stage. And instead of pulling a handheld, I just pulled his guitar out completely and was like, oh, what's wrong with this song? Something's weird. His guitar mic might not be working. I don't know. It just took way too long to figure it out. And it was very odd sounding. So, but it happens. You learn from it and you don't do it again.
I have the opposite version of that story. I was doing Footloose, and at the end of Footloose, there's like a really, really slow, lovely part when Ariel comes out with the dress on. I think that's her name, Ariel. And then the next thing, it's like 17A and 17B in the score. And 17B is like this really upbeat rock thing. And I'm pretty sure in the guitar book, it actually says Mother of All Guitar Solos is what's written in the book. So we're going along. The guitar player turns an extra page in his book. And so the whole band goes into 17A, which is the slow, delicate one, and he starts Mother of All Guitar Solos, right? So,
that's amazing.
And it was a real scorcher, man, I gotta tell you. And so that was one of those things where you know, I was like, where's that freaking guitar fader? How quickly can I get to that? Because we gotta put a stop to that shit.
Yeah. But sometimes it, you know, the moment happens and it's over, and unfortunately you just don't do it again, and you have to kind of move on with what's already happened.
Unless, you know, things go so fast.
Well,
unless someone needs a refund.
You might need to go apologize to a performer as well. That's definitely something I've done.
Yeah. I mean, you guys deal with so many people fast on and off the stage. Like, that's one of the reasons I like working monitors, is you're a personality wrangler as well, like you said.
Totally.
And that's part of the fun game, you know, because then you know what people really need and what they don't. So that being said, you also have to deal with a lot of the same crews. You see a lot of the same theater union come in. Do you make good friends with a lot of those people and it's like an easier day? Like, what is it like to be on the other side of your show coming into a house?
Hell. Kevin carries a yardstick and he slapped people in the shin. He slapped the locals in the shin.
No, I mean, I think it works both ways, though. I've walked into houses and they see who the audio team is and they're happy to have us there. But I have also walked into houses where I see who the audio team is and I suddenly want to turn around and not come back. But yeah, I mean, it's we all have people in different locals and situations that we remember when we see certain individuals. And it definitely works in your favor when it can. But that's kind of the nice part about revisiting venues. I visited the same venue in Detroit for my first three tours, and it was amazing. Kind of had a shorthand already, and it was great.
Really, yeah. Like, and the househead there loves you, so
I know because he hated you.
I heard there's a couple venues around the country where there's a picture of Kevin in black and white in the box office. It's like, don't let this guy in.
Oh my gosh. I don't remember. I think I was in Florida somewhere where I opened up a panel to patch something, and there was a picture of Kevin and like a handwritten note that was like, oh, we left our snake behind or something. And oh man, you just never know.
Alyssa, I'm curious, what would be a looking ahead in terms of what you've accomplished?
Poor Chris, he's trying to like do serious questions here, man. I really, I appreciate the effort, bro.
Can we just have a podcast?
Listen, if Kevin wasn't here, it would be much more serious.
Damn. No, that's my fault, actually.
I'm gonna have to get an instant replay with some like wacky sounds.
You were saying?
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
It's all good. So listen, so looking back at what you've done, and you know, where would you want to go from here? Like, what does the future look like for you? Like, if there's something you're like striving for, a particular type of tour to be on, a position to be on, what would the pinnacle be for you in the future?
That's a really great question. I ask myself all the time.
Deep. Damn.
Yeah. I don't know, because I will say I feel like I've gotten kind of far within Broadway touring pretty quickly. And so I don't really know. I would love to work on Broadway, but I would hate to live in New York. So that's kind of complicated. I love the adrenaline that comes with doing a live event. So I don't know whether that's award shows, big and live and huge, and you have one chance and that's exciting. I'm not really sure. And I think that's part of this whole COVID situation is trying to explore what makes me tick. So I don't know.
Same question for Kevin. I thought you were
finished. No, it's fine. Go ahead.
That's a great point that like this COVID situation is sort of a great chance to see what makes us tick. I'm Kevin definitely makes me tick. I don't know. It feels corny when I say it, but working on Hamilton was definitely my dream job. Like, it was the job that I wanted. It was one of the few jobs that I've actually pursued and not just sort of stumbled into. And so I was super happy. And looking back a little bit at your question about the difference between sitting in one place versus touring, I really was finding some magic in being able to sort of fine tune what I was doing instead of the panic of having to move the show every week or two. So I was really enjoying that. And so I don't know. I have a hard time looking far in the future. I like to say that 10 years ago, I didn't know that theater mixing was a real job. And now I'm making a living at theater mixing, or I have been known to make a living at theater mixing. So like making plans too far out is scary, but you know, more Hamilton would be great. Maybe touring with Elissa again one day.
Maybe.
It'd be nice.
A Hamilton 2.
No, that would be great.
Do you think they could come out with a sequel?
I have no comment.
There's a lot of material.
What was the other one? Frotown? That's Frotown. The one I'm going to
do. Yeah. I'm going to start throwing up some ideas.
You know what? I actually wouldn't go see that because I'm sure it wouldn't match what I see in my head. You know what I mean? It's just like, that's already just bigger and more awesome in my head than that could ever possibly be.
You go to it. It turns out it's just Motown the musical, but on ice.
Yeah. Just with roller skates.
Lots of
glitter. And actually not ice skates, just ice.
People just slipping around.
What could go wrong?
Sounds like a B Market arena tour.
It does. Elissa, I don't know where in the country you call home, but if the Signal Noise podcast folks were to come visit you and you said, hey, I know this great place to go out and eat, where would you take us?
Oh, my goodness.
This is the most important question on the show, so take your time.
Oh, gosh. I was not.
Kevin had to answer this question, I'm pretty sure.
Kevin answered it?
Kevin, did we ask you this question?
I don't know. I don't have a home. You can't.
No, we talked about what they eat on lunch during break, and it was very boring answer. So,
Someone was. I think AB bashed sushi in San Francisco, so she got a lot of hate mail about that. But
she did.
from me.
Kyle checks our hate mail. So, signal2noisepodcast@gmail.com, or you can go to signalnoisepodcast.com.
I'll reply to you.
It goes straight to Kyle. So if he wants to talk shit, send it right to Kyle.
Send it.
Elissa's going to tell us about her favorite casino buffet.
I'll
tell you mine. I lived in Vegas for 7 years, so I'll tell you mine.
Oh, jeez.
I have an answer, but it has nothing to do with where I live. I am currently in Las Vegas, but from being on the road, and I know there's a situation with tacos on this show.
Situation.
Situation is a good and
diplomatic, very diplomatic phrasing.
Situation. Who prefaced this conversation?
I think they're passing notes.
No, because it was.
I didn't tell her Kevin was coming on. That was a surprise.
It's true.
So best she's arrived at that ever. On her own.
Taco situation.
Okay, tacos. So
you're stalling. You're stalling. And listen, come on, get to
no,
it.
No. Okay, in Ohio, there's a place called Condado. It's in Cleveland, and it is the most incredible, like upscale gourmet tacos I've ever had in my life. And I go there every night.
Well, hold on. That is the first time I think upscale and gourmet have been used in the same sentence as tacos. Yeah. We've been talking about tacos in a long time.
And she said Cleveland.
I know.
Bring some new ground here on the show tonight. I hope everyone's still listening at this point.
Do you remember when hamburgers used to be like Okay, it's not about the city. It's about the tacos. We have to focus here. Hamburgers used to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have a burger.
She's taking charge of the show, y'all. You hear that? This is great.
if we would just shut up, she could actually talk.
You got me started talking about food. I just, you know, that's why you tour eat all kinds of different things. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. No, I wasn't giving you a hard time. I was giving us a hard time for talking over you. So go ahead.
No. I just, Condado, it's amazing. And yes, upscale and gourmet and amazing.
Where's your favorite local jam in Las Vegas that you go to, your little hidden local jam? And I'll tell you mine.
I haven't lived here in 10 years. The only reason I'm here is because I'm not on the road. So I don't really have an answer to that one.
Zen Curry. It's Japanese curry place. Find it.
Ooh.
Get into it. Really? It's insane. Local jam. Like,
wow, I didn't see that one coming, Kyle. That came out of left field, man.
Yeah, dude. I got a bunch of little local jams in Vegas, man. That's all me and my lady did was eat.
Please send me a list.
Eat, girl.
Well, Alyssa, thank you very much for being with us.
It's thank been you for a having lot of fun. Me.
Kevin.
Yeah, and Kevin, thank you
back
for
any time.
Can we get a little bit of beard rubbing on the mic real quick?
Oh yeah,
go out here. Oh my god! I could have done without that.